Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you, it's only seed. It's the heart afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes a chance. It's the one who won't be taken, who cannot seem to give. And it's the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. When the night has been too lonely and the road has been too long, and you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember, in the winter, lie beneath the bitter snow, lies the seed that with God's love in the spring becomes the rose.
Our gospel reading this morning is from the book of Luke, chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. Now, more so than any of our other gospels, Luke contains stories of Jesus that focus on issues of wealth, poverty, and possessions. So in this passage, as we continue this journey towards Jerusalem that Jesus is making in Luke's gospel, he's speaking to a crowd of thousands, encouraging them to be strong in the face of persecution by their oppressors. When he's interrupted by a man who has a family inheritance issue that he wants Jesus to settle. So in context, this request seems self-serving and hopelessly petty. But in Jesus' time, religious authorities had the power to settle such disputes, so the request is not completely out of left field. But Jesus wants no part of this. Instead, he uses the request as an opportunity to address the underlying issue, which is greed. And as he does so often, Jesus tells us a story, which has come to be known as the parable of a rich fool. Now, anytime a rich man asks Jesus a question or appears in one of his stories, we know it's not going to end well for the rich guy. But as you listen to the story, as we told it to the children, note how many times the rich man says, "I" or "my." This gives us a hint that this is not a story that is meant to disparage the inherent evils of wealth, as much as it is about the dark side of greed. Because as with many of our human failings, greed serves as a distraction and takes up space in our lives and our hearts that should instead be filled by the things of God: love, compassion, and grace. So in some ways, this passage mirrors the one we heard a few weeks ago about Mary and Martha, where Martha was distracted by her task in the kitchen, by her busyness, and was concerned that her sister wasn't giving enough. Here, our rich fool and our inheritance seeker are distracted by their greed, their desire to have more than they've been given. This constant craving is one that we all seem to have. And as always, Jesus offers us a solution on how to deal with it. So let's listen to the words from the Gospel of Luke and listen also to the Word of God.
Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things that you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God." Here ends our reading. May God bless us with understanding.
Sixty-three-year-old Larry Yockey is a wheat farmer. He lives in Ricksfield, Washington, which is just south of Spokane, with his wife and two daughters. Now, Larry Yockey's father and his grandfather and great-grandfather all farmed the same 1,200 acres that Larry tends. Four generations of farmers, feeding their own families and thousands of others from the grain they planted, nurtured, and harvested from the land. And just like his father and his father's father and his grandfather's father, Larry Yockey is a one-man operation. 100% of his income comes from the wheat that he grows and harvests himself every year, all on his own. But this year, for the first time in 50 years, that harvest almost didn't happen. Back in February, Larry Yockey was diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma, the cancer that first appeared as a spot on his back has now spread to his bones, resulting in a broken hip and broken ribs, and leaving Larry unable to put in the long hours or do the heavy lifting that needs to be done to tend to his farm. Now, a few months ago, Larry was in town and a neighbor asked him if he'd be harvesting this year, given his health. And Larry reluctantly responded, "No." For Larry, cutting and threshing the wheat is normally a 3-week job that he does from sunup to sundown. And in his current condition, he just didn't see how he would physically be able to do it, to get his crop in on time before the wind and the rain and the heat laid it to waste. The neighbor told Larry not to worry. He would speak to a few of their neighboring farmers and try and rally some help. Now, it's not in Larry's DNA to ask for help, but just knowing that at least a few of his crops might be harvested and sold gave him some peace of mind. But when he stepped out on his porch last Saturday, on the day that the harvest was to begin, Larry expected to find two or three of his neighboring farmers taking precious time away from their own farms to lend him a hand. Instead, what he saw brought tears to his eyes. 60 farmers from all over the region had descended upon his fields. Stretched from one end of his acreage to another, it was a relative convoy of industrial combines, threshers, and 18-wheeler tractor trailers. Even the local fire department was there to lend a hand, along with a bevy of workers from the town, auto mechanics, store clerks, barbers. Those not working in the fields were there to help bring drinks and food to those who were. Working together, the neighbor brigade completed 3 works of harvesting in less than 8 hours. All of the crops were saved. And looking out at the flurry of activity in his fields, Yoki said, "It's not describable the gratitude that I feel as what's going on out there. Thank you really doesn't do justice here." And we might ask ourselves, what is it about this man, Larry Yoki, that caused so many to want to give up their time and their money to help him? Especially when he hadn't directly asked any of them for help and certainly wasn't expecting it. Now, the short feature story that reported this good news event doesn't tell us much about what Larry did to cultivate such a neighborly response. There was no mention of his kind heart or compassionate acts that would lead us to think that this was a way for folks to pay him back for all that he'd done for them. There was no mention of people clamoring to help because they'd experienced cancer in their own families. They knew the struggle, and they wanted to help in some way, to feel empowered in the face of a disease that leaves us feeling powerless. And there was no mention of this being an intentional counterreaction to the time and culture that we live in, where we're more likely to hear stories about people driven apart over ideological differences rather than coming together over a common and concrete goal. So perhaps this really was just small town neighbors helping neighbors, putting aside their own needs for the needs of another. But you have to believe that the relationships that Larry built with his neighbors played some role in this scenario. If no one knew him, if he kept to himself and was a one-man show, claiming no outside influence, making no space in his life for anyone or anything other than his own need to acquire, achieve, and build, no one would have known that Larry had cancer. No one would have thought to ask how his health might impact his harvesting. And no one would have taken that next step to say, "No need to worry, we'll find help." When we think about greed, we often think about it in terms of money, resources, and possessions. This desire we have to build bigger stores of money so we can buy bigger and better things and then build bigger and better barns to keep them in. And when we think about greed in this way, we then think about the way it impacts others in the terms of money and resources and possessions. because the more we have, the less others may have. And the more we desire to hold on to what we have out of fear, the less likely it is that we'll share with others out of love. And the more imbalanced our society is in terms of money and resources and possessions, the more likely we are to have problems arise that disproportionately affect those on the lesser end of the scale. In terms of housing and food insecurity, limited access to health care or education, and increased incidences of violence and crime. But greed is much more than our desire to hold on to money, possessions, and resources out of selfishness and fear. Greed grows out of idolatry. Our constant craving for something to fill us, to complete us, to satisfy us. Something that gives our life meaning and purpose. Something that gives us pleasure and contentment. That gives us happiness and joy. And we can make an idol out of anything, out of money or possessions, our work or our achievements, sex or drugs, sports and recreation, fame or affirmation, or our need to feel safe and secure. Even healthy things like gardening and yoga can become idols. When we pour so much of our time and our energy and our focus into that one thing that we ignore nearly everything and everyone else, in the belief that it is our source of meaning and purpose and happiness, rather than what we actually crave, what we are created to crave, and that is relationship with others and with God. Now, Augustine wrote, "You have made us for yourself, O God, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in thee." And to paraphrase 17th century mathematician and theologian Blaise Pascal, there is an infinite abyss, a God-shaped hole in the heart of every human being that only our infinite God can fill. Now, the rich man in Jesus' parable speaks of my grain and my goods and my barns, and God says to him, "You fool. When you pass from this world, whose will they be then? Minus your possessions, what will you have to show for a life long lived?" When we make space for others, when we take the time to build relationships, we just may find that they alone are standing when all of our things fall away. And when we make space for God, by recognizing our abundance, lifting up prayers of gratitude, and responding with acts of compassion for others, by default, we create a relationship with our Creator. So when the bottom falls out of our lives, as it will, we have something, someone to catch us, to comfort us, to sustain us, to resurrect us. Now, greed is about much more than a desire to hold onto money, resources, and possessions. Greed is about holding onto fear. Our fear of not having enough. Our fear of losing what we have. Because in an odd way, we find this fear to be comforting and familiar. as it wraps us in a cocoon that we feel protects us, holding others at bay and shielding us from a God who demands more from us. Now, fear-driven greed is what compels young men to pick up guns and shoot them randomly, repeatedly, and recklessly into crowds of strangers. The fear that someone is taking something that is rightfully theirs. The fear that they will be left with nothing when it is taken. Fear-driven greed is also what compels us to throw up our hands, claiming there are complex issues that these acts of violence are driven by that are very difficult to address. The lack of adequate mental health care, the rhetoric surrounding immigration and terrorism and race relations, bullying in schools, the absence of love or faith in the home. Fear-driven greed has us searching through the weeds, looking for a root cause, while we ignore the smoking gun in the young man's hand. Because we fear if we look at it, it will be taken away, along with a sense of security and freedom that we think it brings. Now, Jesus said, take care. Be on your guard against all forms of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And we're all walking around with a God-shaped hole in our hearts, searching for something or someone to fill it. But the only thing that can fill an infinite abyss is our infinite God. We don't need to build bigger barns to hold our grain or hold our guns. We need to build bigger relationships to hold our love and our fear. And the good news is that God has created us to do just that. Thanks be to God, and amen.